Okay, so we are holding on Chaf Beis Amud Aleph, eight lines from the bottom, line against Shema Amina. We discussed the case in the Mishnah, the case of Sukkah HaMeduvlelos, and we have two explanations what Meduvlelos is, one of them being Shmuel's explanation, where some of the schach is higher and some of it is lower. So we said that in that case it's kosher, but with a couple of provisions. We said that Abaya had said that if the higher schach is three or more tfachim higher than the lower schach, then no good, because you can't say lavud anymore. Rava says, actually, it depends. If that higher schach is less than a tefach wide, you're right. But if that higher schach is a tefach wide, then we can say a concept called chavut rami, or chavut really, rami. Chavut means lower down, means lower down. Chavot Rami means like push it down into place. In other words, we consider lahalacha as though that higher schach was pushed down into the spaces between the lower ones, and therefore you have enough schach that altogether. So the point is, when it's on two different levels, then we have you may not even have tzilasa merov mechamasi. You may not have more shade than sun, but because you can say chavot Rami, then therefore it works. Or Tosfos says somewhat differently that because if they're otherwise, we can't say that they combine together for a schach at all. Whatever the case, the point is that so we said that if the upper schach is a tefach wide, then we can say chobot rami, but not if it's not. Based on, we brought an example from a Mishnah in Aulis involving beams in a house, then Rishonim give another criterion as well, which is that you have to have that the space on the bottom is at least wide enough to fit that higher schach or those higher beams if you were to in fact put them down over there. Within that, there's a machlokes. Is it enough that it's just a tefach? Why does it have to be the actual width of the beams or higher schach or whatever itself? Does it have to be exactly the same width? Whatever. The point is that we have this concept called chavut rami, that in certain cases we're able to say that that something higher up is considered as though it was lower down. So, the Gemara says, Yosef of Kahana v'ka'omu l'hoshmaiter. If Kahana was sitting and saying over this statement of Rava about when we can say chavut rami and the proof from the Mishnah and all this, Amalei Rav Ashi, Rav Kahana, but Rav Ashi, who was a Talmud, asks Rav Kahana, "V'chol heicha the less be tefach le'amin and chavut rami." So you're telling me that any time that the thing is less than a tefach wide, you can't say chavut rami. Now, okay, in connection with Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, we said that only if the beams are tefach wide. But we've learned previously that Tumah V'Tahara has its own special rules. Not necessarily, the Ritva says, Rav Ashi's question is not necessarily do those rules apply in other areas of halacha, such as here we're talking about sukkah. So is there in fact that difference between more than a tefach and less than a tefach? Well, Tanya, we learn a braisa, which the braisa is going to talk about dinim involving a koira on a mavui, which we've touched on several times in this masechta, the concept that a mavui, a dead end street or a side street, usually is a dead end. It's usually a mavui sasum, that you have at the open end of it where it opens to Rosh Hashanah Rabim, you have a lechi or a koira, and that's what you need in order to be able to carry in it. So you have certain rules for the koira. We've touched on them here and there throughout so far in the Masechta. So now you're going to have a long braisa that talks about various details about the koira, and eventually we're going to see from one of them that on the face of it, we say chavut rami, even for things that are less than a tefach wide. So the braisa goes, koira hayotze mikosel zeh, ve'ena negas mikosel zeh. Suppose you have a koira, this horizontal beam that's supposed to go across the opening of the mavri. Suppose that it comes out of one wall, but it doesn't quite reach the other wall. The chen shtei koiras, or the same thing if you have two beams, achas yotze mikosel zeh, ve'achas yotze mikosel zeh, one sticks out of one wall, the other from the other wall. Ve'ena negas zubazu, but they don't quite meet, they don't touch in the middle. So then it depends. In both of those cases, pochas mishloisha, if the space between the end of the koira and the wall, or between the end of one koira and the other is less than three tefachim, then you don't have to get another koira. Those two work together as a koira because of lavud. Shloisha, but if you have three or more tefachim space, tzarech lahavi koira acheres, you have to get another koira because then you can't say lavud anymore. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Remember, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says it's not three tefachim, but rather pachas me'abar in tzarech lo v'kara acheres, abar tzarech lo v'kara acheres. He says it's not three tefachim, but rather four. The Gemara explains in Eruvin that in fact Rabbi Gamliel holds that the whole concept of lavud goes up to four tefachim, not like the Chachamim say up to three. We're always familiar with that lavud is up to three tefachim. That's only according to the Chachamim. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel would say four. Next, continues the Braisa. Another case. The chain shtei kodes amasimos. The same thing. What if you have two parallel kodes, but loy bezuka de la kabbal ariach, loy bezuka de la kabbal ariach? Neither one is wide enough for a brick to sit on top of it. The Mishnah and the Gemara in Eruvin explain that the Koda, now unlike if you have a lechi, a vertical pole by the entrance of the Mavri, then you don't doesn't have a minimum length or width. It just has a minimum height of 10 tefachim. When it comes to a Koda, it has a minimum width. And the minimum width is, it has to be a tefach wide. Bricks in those times were made in a standard size, 3 by 3 tefachim. There was such a thing, a whole brick is called the Levena. Then you have, sometimes they'd cut a brick in half, and such a thing is called an ariach, so it would be 3.5 by 1.5 tefachim. Sorry, it would be 3 by 1.5 tefachim. And the Chachamim decided that a koda has to be wide enough that you could put the width of the ariach on the koda and it would stay there. It also has to be, the Mishnah describes over there, according to the Chachamim, that the koda has to be strong enough to hold the ariach. We'll mention that point in a second. Anyway, the point is, now a tefach, even though the ariach is a tefach and a half wide, because the Gemara explains over there, you can have a half tefach sticking out. You have a quarter of a tefach, which is one etzba on one side, a quarter tefach on the other side, that you can put mortar over there in order to hold the ariach in place. And therefore, that's considered that it's enough of a space that you can put an ariach on. But therefore, the koda has to be at least a tefach wide. So now, the scenario here is you have two kodas that are running from one side, of the, from one wall of the mavri to the other, but neither one is a tefach wide. So we have to figure it like this. Im mekabos ariach l'roch by tefach. If when we put them one next to the other, then it'll be, they will have at least a tefach of width, and then we're going to be able to put the ariach on it. Ein sarich lahavi koda acheres. Then you don't have to get another koda. That's fine, even though each piece itself is only a half a tefach wide. But when you combine them together, you have a tefach, and there you go. V'im lav, and if not, that sarich lahavi koda acheres, then you're going to have to get another koda. Again, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel disagrees, and he says, he says, if they are able to hold an ariach along its length, along its long dimension, which is 3 tefachim, then you don't have to have another koda. And if not, then you do. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rashi explains, is coming to be makel. Namely, like this, the Tanna Kamma is saying that the two kodas together have to be a width of a tefach. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel saying, what you can do is actually, you can have the one koda, then you have a space of a one or two tefachim, then you have the other koda, all together from the outer edge of one koda to the outer edge of another of the other koda is a total of 3 tefachim. That's fine, because as long as those two kodas combine will hold the weight of the ariach. So now what you do is, fine, according to the Tanna Kamma, you were supposed to put the width of the ariach along the koda, the 1.5 tefachim. Instead, what you do is you have the space from the outer edge of one koda to the outer edge of the other koda is 3 tefachim. Very good. So then, okay, so you have some of that as empty space. Who cares? The point is that you can put the ariach on the one end of the ariach on one koda, the other end on the other, and the rest of it will be over the empty space between them, and that still works, according to the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Okay. Now here comes the case, which is what we're bringing in for the issue of Chovot Rami. The Braisa continues. What if the two kodas that we're talking about that we want to combine together, what if they're not lying right next to the other? What if one of them is higher and one of them is lower? So then Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda Omer, Royin Ho Yona Ki Ilu Ilamata. So Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda says, we consider the higher one as if it was lower down, Besetachtona Ki Ilu Ilamayla, and the lower one, or the lower one as if it was above. In other words, we use the concept that we just said called Chovot Rami, where we're lowering one of them to go, and we're considering La Halacha as though one of them was lowered to meet the other one. As long as the upper one is not higher than 20 amos and the lower one is not lower than 10 tefachim, because the koda has to be between 10 tefachim and 20 amos off the ground, but no more and no less than that. So now that's the part that we're bringing for Chovot Rami. Ha, so the implication is zev zev seich esrim, that if both of them are within 20 amos, between ten tefachim and 20 amos, amunin chovot rami. Then we're going to say chovot rami. Afa gavdales be tefach, even though it's not a tefach wide. So you see therefore ask Rav Ashi to Rav Kahana that you don't necessarily need something to be a tefach wide in order to say chovot rami. So what is Rava telling us? So Rav is bringing a proof from alois in connection with beams, in connection with Hilchos Tumah Vatara. Fine, but in Hilchos Tumah Vatara, we know that you need an oil tefach, and less than that is not an oil, and that has special rules of its own. What we see when it comes to dinim of Eruvin, when it comes to the dinim of a Mavui, that we don't need it to be a tefach wide, and we still say Chovot Rami. Why don't we say the same thing in connection with a sukkah as well? Tosfos points out, we're trying to bring a proof from Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Evidently, the Chachamim disagree with him. So you see that according to the Chachamim, Chovot Rami wouldn't work in this case, no. Tosfos says no. The reason is because it's not that the Chachamim disagree with the concept of Chovot Rami. It's because they're saying that after all, the Koda does physically need to be able to hold an Ariach, and here it can't. If it was within three tefachim, then they would allow it because lavod. But more than three tefachim, the fact is that it physically can't hold the ariach. So anyway, back to the Gemara. So the question is again that in that case we see each koda is less than a tefach, and obviously so because if each koda was a tefach, then you wouldn't need to be talking about another koda anyhow. All the minimum width of the koda is a tefach. So obviously, we're talking about ones that are narrower than a tefach, and we're still saying chovot rami. Amalei, so Rav Kahana answers him, tritz ve'ema hochen. You have to explain, you have to clarify the words of the braisa and make it say as follows. We said in Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda's statement that we can consider the higher one as though it was lower, or the lower one as if it was higher, provided we said that they're not, that neither one is less than 10 tefachim off the ground, and neither one is more than 20 amos off the ground. Instead, clarify and have the braisa say as follows. So the upper one can't be above 20 amos, it has to be within 20. And then it also has to be that the lower one is within three tefachim of height from it. So the top, the upper one, let's say, is at 19 amos and 5 tefachim, and the lower one is at 19 amos and 3 tefachim. So they're both within 20, and they're both within 20 amos, and they're only 2 tefachim apart, let's say. Or you can explain that the other case would be that the lower one has to be above 10 tefachim, and the higher one is within 3 tefachim vertically from it. So the lower one is, let's say, 11 tefachim off the ground, and the upper one is 13 tefachim off the ground. Aval shloisha. But the braisa is not necessarily addressing the case where they're more than three apart, given to less like tefach, since they're more than three tefachim apart. And in addition, the thing is not a tefach wide, lo yamin and chovot rami, then we cannot say chovot rami, like Rava had said. So in other words, the braisa didn't specify, but Rav Kahana is saying that's what the braisa is implying, that you have in order to for this to work, that the two kodas should combine together, for the two kodas to combine together, you need two criteria. Number one, that neither one is above 20 amos and neither one is below 10 tefachim. And number two, that the vertical distance between one and the other is less than 3 tefachim. Okay. So that's that. So that's the maskana. So those are the dinim when it comes. So applying that to the dinim of schach of what Shmuel had explained on Mishnah about sukkah and devlelus to be talking about. Again, you have some of the schach higher, some of it lower, and the result is you don't have tzilos and meruvah mechamasa in your sukkah. But if you have either the higher schach is within, if the higher schach is within three tefachim of the lower schach, then it always combines together no matter how wide each part is. And if they're more than three, if they're three or more tefachim apart, then you have to have the upper schach has to be at least a tefach in width. And according to most of the Rishonim, you have to have enough of a space on the bottom for that schach to be able to fit into. And then we consider as though it actually fit it in there, and we say chobot rami. And therefore, the sukkah is kosher. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah, "V'shitzilasa meruvah mechamasa k'sheva." If the sukkah has more shade than sun, then it's kosher. Now, the Gemara asks. So the Gemara says, "Ha ki hadari psula." So the implication of our Mishnah is that if they were exactly the same, then it would be possible because you need more shade. The problem with that is v'hatnan v'idach pirkin. In the first parak, in the first Mishnah, we said v'shachamasa meruvah metzilasa psula. We said if there's more sun than shade, then it's possible, implying haki hadadi ksheira, which implies that if they were exactly the same, it would be kosher. So what is it? What's the din if the sukkah has exactly half shade and half sun? The answer is like kasha kan milamayla kan milamata. It depends whether you're talking about from the top or from the bottom. Meaning, in other words, so Rashi explains that, like this, if you have, let's say you're using sticks for your schach. If you have between one stick and the next is exactly the width of a stick, so you have exactly 50% of the sukkah is covered, then the sukkah is going to be possible because what happens is the open area, the sunny area, sunlight spreads by comparison with the shade. So therefore, if you have it's exactly half and half on top, by the time you reach the bottom of the sukkah, by the time you reach the floor of the sukkah, it's going to the sunlight, the lit area is going to spread out, and therefore you're going to have on the bottom of the sukkah more sun than shade, and that would be possible. As opposed to when our Mishnah says it must have tzilasa meruvah mechamasa, it means on top you have to have more tzel than chama. And that way, the result of it is that when you get to the floor of the sukkah, you'll have exactly 50-50, and that will be fine. As opposed to the first Mishnah of the Masechta that said chamosa meruvah mitzilasa is possible, what that meant is if you have on the floor you have chamosa meruvah mitzilasa, then it's going to be possible, even though that meant that on the top you have exactly 50-50, because the point is that it spread out as it went further down. Amr Papa, so Papa says, "Hainu de Amri Inshi." This is like the expression that people say, "Kizuza mila el ki istira mila tachas." When you have a small hole the size of a zuz up above, then below on the ground, it's going to be larger. It's going to be the size of an istira, which is a larger coin. So in other words, exactly that, the lit area spreads out. Now, Tosfos has a problem with that. Because here we're saying Rav Papa is giving the answer. Rav Papa himself holds, and we learned this in the previous parak, that a sukkah or a mechitza or whatever is kosher if porutz ka'omid. And in fact, the halacha is like him, that if it's porutz ka'omid, if you have exactly as much open space as closed space, then it is kosher. So why over here would we be saying that there's a problem if you have exactly as much schach as spaces between the schach? Also, Tosfos points out that an astira is not necessarily a larger coin than a zuz, it may be smaller. So Tosfos explains rather what we mean is that if you were to go up to the top of the sukkah and measure, then you would find that the gaps are a certain size and the schach is a certain size. But when you look at it from the ground, then they're not necessarily going to be the same size. Because what happens is your eyes are going to focus more on the schach and less on the air spaces, and therefore the air spaces are going to seem smaller to you. So if you standing on the ground, so Tosfos refers to the fact, the same way, for example, as we look up at the stars and they seem tiny, even though they're gigantic, the same idea, in other words, is if you're going to look from the bottom and you're going to look towards the top of the sukkah and look at the gaps, if it looks to your estimation that you have exactly as much schach as empty space, then it's going to be possible. Because in fact, if you were to go up there and measure, you would actually find that you have more empty space than schach. So nothing to do, Tosfos says, with the sunlight spreading out, but rather with your perception from the bottom versus from the top of what the actual size of the schach and the gaps is. A number of Rishonim in turn argue on Tosfos. The Raivad, for one thing, points out, come on, what are you going to tell me? The Mishnah is telling us another detail just to tell us about a person makes an error in measurement like that. Who cares the fact that you look from one perspective, you see it one way, you look from another perspective, you see it another way. The fact is, you have 50-50, or you don't have 50-50, as the case may be. Why would we need to specify that? A number of Rishonim also point out that there could be a difference when we say that parutz ka'omid would be kosher. That could be when we're talking in terms of a sukkah. That could be talking about when you have posel schach over there. But here you're talking about air. Here you're talking about air space. That's something else altogether. Then you have a special din by sukkah that you need silosa meruba mechamasa and not just equal to chamasa. And therefore, so most of the rishonim accept Rashi's opinion, and in fact, that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. So if you have exactly 50-50, then it's going to be possible because it's going to spread out on bottom, but if you have a little more schach than empty spaces, and you don't have any spaces that are three tefachim, then you're good, because then you can have on the floor of the sukkah, they'll be exactly 50-50. There is actually a sicha in Chelek Lamed Beis where the Rebbe analyzes this and talks about that really you have, essentially, there are two dinim in schach, one that applies to the schach itself, the other that applies to the floor of the sukkah where you're sitting over there and eating or sleeping or whatever, and those have slightly different dinim, which is why we can have over here that we can be talking about in terms of the schach being exactly 50-50, and in principle it should be kosher, but the problem is that then you have the way it spreads out on the ground versus you have the 50-50 on the ground, which means a majority of schach up on top. So the Rebbe talks about, you know, in a brisker style over there, that they're actually svei dinim, that there are two dinim over here, one referring to the schach and the other referring to the effect that the schach has on the sukkah, kind of. One other thing it mentions in Shulchan Aruch, and this connection is if you have an area of your sukkah, which is, so what if you have most of your sukkah is tzilosa merubah mechamasa, but then you have part of it where the schach is sparser, and you have chamasa merubah mitzilosa. So that, there's no problem in and of itself, because that small part is bottled to the sukkah. However, it does bring in Shulchan Aruch that if that area with the sparse schach is by itself 7x7 tefachim, then you shouldn't sit in that area, because then, since it's large enough to be a sukkah on its own, you can't necessarily say that it's bottled to the larger sukkah. So in that case, you would have to put more schach over there, or at least enough to make the area smaller so that's not 7x7. Okay. The Mishnah had said, "Ha'mu'uba kimin bayis," that if the schach is thick like the ceiling of a house, so we said even if you can't see the stars from within the sukkah, then it's still kosher. So turn on bottom, we learn in Braisa, "Ha'mu'uba kimin bayis." If the schach of the sukkah is very thick like a house, "Alfa pishena kechovim near mitocha," even if the stars are not visible from inside it, kshera, then it's kosher, like the Mishnah had said. What about ein koich vechama nirin mitocha? What if the koich vechama are not visible from within the sukkah? What are koich vechama? Rashi explains it means the rays of the sun. So when the sun is shining down on the sukkah, what if you can't see the rays of the sun inside the sukkah at all? The Rambam rather explains that what it means is you have certain large stars that you're able to see by day.
For example, not really stars, maybe, but planets. Sometimes, for example, you can see Venus or Mars or whatever during the day, even though the sun is shining, because they're relatively close to us and they're bright enough. So then, according to that, it would be that. Anyway, with Shammai Poston or with Silver Machshirin, in that case, with Shammai says it's possible because it's not like a sukkah anymore; it's more like a house. And with Silver says it's kosher even in that case. Even though you can't see the rays of the sun, or even though you can't even see the bright stars or planets that you would see during the daytime. The halacha, of course, is like this Hillel. So therefore, even if the schach is thick, then the sukkah is still kosher. However, we did learn at the beginning of the Masechta that Tosfos had said, if the schach is so thick that rain won't penetrate, then it's possible, because then you can't really consider it a sukkah anymore. Then it's really more like the roof of a house. Okay. Mishnah says, "Ha'oisa sukkase b'roish ha'agala oy b'roish ha'sfina." If a person makes a sukkah on top of a wagon, or on top of a ship. So a wagon would be like where the sukkah mobiles we're familiar with nowadays, and on a ship would be exactly that. He builds it on the deck of the ship. Ksheira, the sukkah is kosher, but oylem lo b'yomtiv, you're allowed to go into it on yomtiv. Now, there's not that much of a chiddush in that you should be allowed to go into it on yomtiv. The reason the Mishnah is mentioning that is because we're going to have other cases later that says you can't go into it on Yom Tov. I don't know, the sukkah mobile, you know, you may not necessarily be able to go into it on Yom Tov either because you could in principle. I mean, when you go, if you go up onto the bed of a pickup truck, you're not necessarily you're not doing anything as far as the car itself. So you can't open a car door, but here you're not. So the chodah you would be able to. In any case, when it's on a wagon of the times of the Gemara, then obviously there's no malach involved in going onto the wagon, and no Isser did Abanon either, so therefore you're fine. On the other hand, Berosh Ha'ilon, on the other hand, if a person makes a sukkah on top of a tree, so he uses the tree as the base for the floor of a sukkah, and then he puts walls and schach on it, or you have Gabe Gomel, or on top of a camel, also kshera. The sukkah is also kosher, because again, that's fine, Diras Arai, and that doesn't matter, according to the Chachamim, a Diras Arai is a sukkah is diras arai, but the ain oilam lo b'yomtiv, but you're not allowed to go into such a sukkah on yomtiv. In the case of the tree, because the chachamim said that you're not allowed to climb a tree because you may break off a branch, and you're not allowed to climb up or ride on an animal for the same reason, because you might break off a branch in order to lead it where to go. So therefore, so such a sukkah would be kosher on chol hamoed, but not on yomtiv. Although Rishonim say that if a person did go in there on Yom Tov, even if he was over and went into it on Yom Tov, he can still make the bracha loch of a sukkah. Okay. How about more cases involving, in another case involving a sukkah with a tree? Shtayim be'ilan v'achas b'dei adam. Now, the Gemara in Shabbos tells us that you're not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos, but also you're not allowed to use the side of the tree for anything. So an example of it would be, let's say put something on top of a branch of a tree on Shabbos, or take something off. What is allowed is what's called sididei tzdadin. That's called tzdadin. What is allowed is what's called sididei tzdadin, the sides of sides, meaning if you have something attached, if you have something hanging from or attached to the tree, and then you have something hanging from that, then you're allowed to use that something else. One example of it actually that comes up lahalacha is, let's say if you have a swing hanging from a branch of a tree, you can't use that swing on Shabbos because it's tzdadin. But if you have hooks attached to the tree, and then you have let's say a hammock attached to those hooks, then that would be fine because the hooks are tzdadin and the hammock itself is tzidei tzdadin. Anyway, the point is, so here you have a scenario where shtayim be'ilan ba'achas b'dei adam. What if you have two walls of your sukkah are held up by trees and one of them by something man-made? So Rashi explains the scenario that you're using the tree as the floor of your sukkah. You're going to put on top of the tree, you're going to put something to use as a floor, and then you're going to build walls and schach. So you have two walls of your sukkah that are standing on the tree, that are standing on branches of the tree. And then you have one wall which is standing on something man-made on the ground and going up high enough to meet the other walls. Or the other way around, you have two man-made walls and one depending on the sukkah. Again, it's in all those cases, it's kosher a sukkah, but again, you can't go into it on yomtiv because when you only have one or two walls that are depending on something man-made, the sukkah is not going to be stable. If you were to remove the tree, then the sukkah would fall down. So therefore, it comes out that you're using the tree. On Shabbos, and you're not allowed to. So therefore, you can only use it, or Yom Tov for that matter. So you can only use such a sukkah on Chol HaMoed. Tosfos has a different explanation of the Shtayim Be'ilan or Shtayim Be'de'odam. We're not talking about Tosfos says that the sukkah is on top of the tree. What we're talking about is that you're using the trees as the walls of your sukkah, and you have your schach. Placed on top of the branches of the trees. So therefore, the fact that the trees themselves are the walls is not a big deal. In fact, we're going to have a Mishnah later on in the Perek that says that that's fine. The problem is that the schach is leaning on the trees, and the problem is people use the schach to place things, that people sometimes use the schach and they place things on it or they hang things from it or whatever, and therefore you're back to the problem of tzdadin, that the schach, being that it leaning on the tree, is considered tzdadin of the tree, and therefore you're not allowed to use it. Now, in Shulchan Aruch, the Alter Rebbe brings in Shulchan Aruch from the Magen Avraham, nowadays that it's much less common, that people generally don't do that. People don't put things on their schach or hang things from it or whatever. So therefore, it might be mutter to use such a sukkah that's built according to the way Tosfos describes. It might be mutter to use it even on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Sholish b'dei odom ba'achas b'dei.
What? One question. If you have a sukkah on a river, do you consider it from the bed of the floor of the river, or do you start it from the water level?
So what are you talking about? You have the sukkah floating in the water? I'm not sure that would be considered a
no, not
sukkah.
Floating. The sukkah is on pillars, but it shouldn't be more than 20 amos from the ground. So where's the 20 amos? It's from the bed of the river, or it's.
You have to sharpen your question a little bit. I mean, if it was just on pillars, you're not going to be able to stand or sit in such a sukkah. But pashtus, we have to be talking about that it has a floor as well. In that case,
yes, of course,
oh, so if it has a floor, then you're measuring from the floor, obviously. And that's okay. No different then. So if you have a sukkah on top of a tree, you're not measuring from the roots of the tree. You're measuring from the floor where you placed your sukkah. From where you placed your floor, it would be the same kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now continues the Mishnah. On the other hand, shalosh b'dei odom ba'achas b'ilan. What if you have three man-made walls? So you have three walls of your sukkah are depending on things that you have that you built on the ground. Ba'achas b'ilan, and only one of them is on a tree. So in Rashi's scenario, again, we're talking about that your sukkah is high up; it's on top of the tree, but three of its walls go all the way down to the ground. Only the fourth one is built from the tree upward. In Tosfos's scenario, we're talking about that you have three of your walls are man-made, and you have your sukkah and you have your schach resting on those walls or on pillars or whatever that you put up, and only on one side do you have the schach resting on the tree. Ksheira, then the sukkah is not only kosher, but ba'olam lo b'yomtiv, you're allowed to go into it on yomtiv because then it's not considered using the tree. By the way, the expression oilin literally means to go up, because in those times, usually people built sukkahs on their roofs, and therefore you would go up to the sukkah. So therefore, that became the standard expression in the Mishnah and in the Gemara for going into the sukkah was oilin. Okay. The Mishnah continues, Zehakfal, this is the general rule, Kol she'inotel ilan,
in any case where if we were to remove the tree, then the sukkah would continue to stand on its own. Then that sukkah is kosher of olam of yomtiv, and you'd be allowed to go into it on yomtiv because then it's not considered you using the tree, which explains that case of the three walls. What does that zeha klal add? The ran and the meiri add it also comes to include a case. What if you only have two walls that are man-made, but they're parallel to each other? So in Rashi's scenario, again, where you have the floor of your sukkah is on the top of the tree, and you have walls, you have some walls that are built on the ground holding it up, and then you have some walls that are not holding it up that are being held up by the tree. What if those two walls that you made, instead of being perpendicular to each other, what if they're parallel to each other, and you put a floor between them? Now, that all by itself is enough to be able to hold up the floor on the schach. Therefore, even if your third wall is being held up by the tree, then that would be fine, and you'd be allowed to use that sukkah on yomtiv. When we said that if two walls were man-made and one held up by the tree, then you can't. We're talking about where those two man-made walls are perpendicular. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Mani masnisin." Now, who is our Mishnah like that allows you to build a sukkah on top of a ship? Rabbi Akiva. So that would be according to Rabbi Akiva. The Tanya, because we learn in a braisa, if a person makes a sukkah on top of a ship. Now, in the Mishnah, we mentioned two cases, on a wagon or on a ship. So Tosfos refers over here to a couple of earlier Tosfos in the Masechta. In one of them, Rabbi Natam says, maybe Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva are only going to be arguing about a case of a ship for reasons that we're going to explain in a second. Maybe they don't argue about a case of a sukkah on a wagon. On the other hand, Tosfos says not necessarily. We could very well say that they're arguing about a wagon as well. Anyway, so if a person makes his sukkah on top of a ship, Rav Gamliel posts over Rav Akiva Machshir. Rav Gamliel says it's possible for reasons that we're going to discuss soon, and Rav Akiva says it's kosher. And we have a case. It happened once that Rav Gamliel and Rav Akiva were traveling on a ship during Sukkot. Omer Rabbi Akiva also sukkah b'resha spina. So Rabbi Akiva went ahead and built a sukkah on top of on the deck of the ship. L'macho noshva ruach va'akarta. The next day, a wind came and blew the sukkah overboard. Or knocked it down, whatever. Omer Rabbi Gamliel, Akiva, heichan sukkoscha. So Rabbi Gamliel says to Rabbi Akiva, Akiva, where's your sukkah? I always thought this is one of the great jokes in the Gemara. Like imagine going over to Rabbi Akiva with a straight face and saying, hey, Rabbi Akiva, where's your sukkah? But the point is, in other words, that the point is, Rabbi Gamliel is saying to Rabbi Akiva, given that your sukkah wasn't going to be able to stand in the first place, then how could you even consider it a kosher sukkah? So in other words, we see that Rabbi Gamliel does not allow you to build a sukkah on the deck of a ship, whereas Rabbi Akiva does. So our Mishnah that says that you could is going according to Rabbi Akiva. Now, what's the machlokas? Omer Abaya, de kule alma heich de ene yichol lamed beruach metzuya diabasha. Everybody would agree that if the sukkah is so flimsy that it wouldn't even stand in a normal land wind. So you have on land, you have winds blow sometimes, regular winds. We're not talking about hurricane force winds or whatever. You have the normal kind of wind that blows in a given area, which is called ruach metzuya. So if the sukkah is so flimsy that it won't stand, even in that, then it's not considered anything. You can't even call that a diras arai. We've said a number of times already that the sukkah needs to be diras arai, but not so arai that it'll fall over even in a normal wind. By the way, there is a lot of discussion about this, and actually we'll talk about it more. We'll talk about it more in tomorrow or the next day, Be'ez Hashem, when we talk about the dinim about the walls of the sukkah moving. This comes up when you deal with the question of canvas sukkahs, what the dinim of them are, because after all, the canvas moves back and forth. Is that considered to be something that stands in a ruach metzuya or not? So we'll talk about that more tomorrow. We'll talk about that more tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Anyway, so if the sukkah can't stand even in a regular wind on land, then for sure it's no good. Even Rabbi Akiva would agree to that. And if it's able to stand even in a powerful wind on land, so maybe not a hurricane force wind, but whatever, an unusually strong wind, then everybody will agree it's kosher.
Ki pligi, the machloikis will be Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Gamliel is b'dichola lamed beruach metzuya diabasha. Suppose it's able to stand in a normal wind on land, the any chola lamed beruach she'ena metzuya diabasha, or really actually the Gersa is supposed to be beruach metzuya diyam. If it can't stand, if it's not able to stand in a normal wind on the sea. Now, winds on the sea are generally stronger than winds on land. First of all, because there's nothing to block them. On land, you have mountains and buildings and trees and whatnot that break that serve as windbreaks. On the sea, you don't have that. Second of all, yeah, on the sea, the ship is moving. The ship is moving, so that also adds to the total amount of wind that the total amount of air movement that's affecting the sukkah. In fact, that also factors into, when we said before, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva arguing about the case of a sukkah on a wagon, or would they agree that that's fine? On the one hand, a wagon is on land, so you don't have any stronger winds there than you do anywhere else on land. On the other hand, again, the wagon is moving, and therefore you have an increased wind speed that affects the sukkah. Anyway, the point is, suppose that the sukkah is strong enough to withstand a regular land wind, but not a regular sea wind. Rabbi Gamliel sava sukkah diras kvavein. Now, Rabbi Gamliel then holds that a sukkah has to be more of a kvirs. We learned in the first parak, we had a list of tanoim that said that a sukkah needs to be diras keva, and Rabbi Gamliel was one of them, on the strength of our braisa over here, that says it has to be permanent. So if it can't stand in a normal sea wind, and that is the normal wind for that kind of place, then it doesn't count for anything, therefore it's not a good sukkah. Therefore, Rabbi Gamliel is saying you can't build a sukkah in such circumstances unless you're able to build it strong enough to withstand a sea wind. So therefore, in that case, if you're not going to, then Rabbi Gamliel said there's no point in building it, which is what he's telling Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva sava sukkah diras arai beinan. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva holds that a sukkah only needs to be a diras arai, like we said before, the Chachamim say, so as long as it's able to withstand a normal land wind, shader, then it's kosher even when it's on the ship. So of course, once it blows over, then fine, it's a done deal. You can't use it anymore. But up to that point, until it blows over, then you're going to be able to use it. Whereas Rabbi Gamliel would hold, it's not even kosher as a sukkah because it's not the kind of thing that can be called a sukkah. Wow. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Oya gabe gomel chula. We said another case is where you.
So what's the halacha?
So the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. Generally, first of all, the Stam Mishnah is like Rabbi Akiva. Second of all, we have a rule, halacha ki Rabbi Akiva mechaveroi, that when Rabbi Akiva is arguing against one individual Tana, the halacha is like him. Here he's arguing against Rabbi Gamliel, therefore the halacha is like him. So yes, a sukkah is fine as long as it's able to stand in a ruach mitzuya diabosha, in a normal land wind, even if you're building it on a ship where the winds are stronger, and it may blow over soon, but until it does, you're able to use it.
Okay.
Then we said in the Mishnah, we said another case was you built a sukkah on top of a camel, and we said it's a kosher sukkah, but you can't use it on Shabbos or Yom Tov because you're not allowed to ride on an animal. The Gemara says, masnisim mani Reb Meir. Now, who is our Mishnah like? That would be according to Reb Meir. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, ha'oisa sukkose agabi behema, if a person makes a sukkah on top of an animal. Now, you can have the case that we just said where you're building it on, where you're building it on the back of a camel. Rashi gives another scenario over here, which is that let's say you have two horses or two other animals, and you put a door or some other board across the backs of the two animals, so that serves as the floor of your sukkah, and then you build mechitzis, and then you build walls and schach above that. Rabbi Meir machshir, but Rabbi Yehuda poisel. Rabbi Meir says it's kosher. Rabbi Yehuda would say it's posel. Tosfos actually, though, has a different understanding of this algabe behema. And in fact, the fact that Rashi mentions two animals is a little bit odd, considering that in the Mishnah we have a case of one camel. So there's a couple of explanations about it. One of them is that the Gemara is going to discuss soon the question of whether we have to be concerned, according to the Meir, that an animal might die. So now, if you have two animals holding up your sukkah, we're not going to be choshish that both of them are going to die. Therefore, that would be fine. That might be one reason why Rashi mentions two animals. The other one is because, practically speaking, one animal might not be able to hold the entire weight of a sukkah, whereas two would. And a camel by itself, a pastress would be able to anyway. Would be able to also. Anyway, Tosfos has a different explanation that what we're talking about is the schach is resting on a frame that you put on the ground, on poles and a frame that you put on the ground. Then what you do is you're using the animal, then what it is you're using the animal as you want to use it as the base of your sukkah and for your walls. In other words, right now, without the animal, all you have is like an open gazebo with four pillars in the corners and schach on the top. And we know that's not a kosher sukkah. So therefore, what you're doing is you're trying to use the animal. You're going to bring it in over there underneath that framework, and then you're going to put a floor. You're going to put, like Rashi had said, you're going to put a door or a board or something like that on the back of the animal and walls above that. So those will be the floor and the walls of your sukkah. So now, Rav Meir is saying that's kosher, and Rav Yehuda is saying it's possible. My time of the Rav Yehuda. Now, why does Rav Yehuda say that that's possible, a sukkah on top of an animal? He says, because Omakro, because the Pasuk says, Chaga Sukkos Tasavacha Shivas Yomim, the Pasuk says you should make for yourself a yomtiv of Sukkos for 7 days. And the implication is, Sukkah Ru'ya L'Shiva Shma Sukkah. Only a Sukkah which is suitable to be used for all 7 days is considered a Sukkah. Sukkah She'ena Ru'ya L'Shiva Lo Shma Sukkah. Whereas a sukkah that's not suitable for all 7 days can't be called a sukkah. Since midrabanan, you're not allowed to climb up on an animal on Shabbos or Yom Tov, and obviously 7 days always include a Shabbos, and of course you always have the 1 day of Yom Tov at the beginning, then therefore Rabbi Yehuda says that the pasuk is implying that you can't use that for a sukkah. Now, of course, it's true the gzeira to not go up on an animal is only dirabanan, but the ra'ah uses an expression, the ra'ah, one of the rishonim, uses the expression that it's almost like something daraisa. Once the chachamim made the rule that you can't ride on an animal on Shabbos, then it's tantamount to a daraisa saying that now it's not usable for all 7 days. So who cares? The fact is, daraisa it is suitable. The fact is, it's only the chachamim made a gzera not to ride on an animal. Daraisa would have been perfectly allowed to go up to that sukkah. So you can't say that the Torah is excluding it by chaga sukkas tasal choshivasya. An interesting point is who the halacha is like. Usually the halacha is like a stam mishnah, and we said that our stam mishnah goes like a mayor. But on the other hand, we have a rule that Reb Meir against Reb Yehuda, usually the halacha is like Reb Yehuda. Does that mean the halacha would be over here like Reb Yehuda? By the way, Tosfos points out the machloikas obviously would also apply to the case of our mishnah when you had a sukkah on top of a tree. Same idea, because you can't climb a tree on Shabbos or Yom Tov either. So most of the Rishonim paskin like Reb Meir, because after all, halacha is stam mishnah, and therefore the halacha is the sukkah is kosher. Furthermore, we're going to have later on in the perek where we're going to discuss, we're going to have a separate machloikas of Reb Eliezer and the Chachamim, whether your sukkah has to actually be there for all 7 days, or whether, for example, can you build yourself a sukkah during Chol HaMoed? According to the Chachamim, yes. According to Reb Eliezer, no. The halacha there is like the Chachamim. Therefore, that means a sukkah doesn't have to actually be there for all 7 days. So by the same token over here, that would mean that the sukkah doesn't have to be usable for all 7 days, and therefore it would be kosher if it's on top of a camel or a tree or what have you. There are a couple of the Rishonim who bring from Rabbi Yitzchak Gaius, who says that no, the halacha actually would be like Rabbi Yehuda over here, because again, when you have the very fact that the Gemara needs to establish that the Mishnah is like Reb Meir, when we know usually Stam Mishnah and Reb Meir, and we're saying that we brought the argument of Rabbi Yehuda against him, maybe that implies therefore that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, following the usual rule that Reb Meir could Rabbi Yehuda, halacha could Rabbi Yehuda. So that would mean then that such a sukkah would be possible. It still would be the case, in other words, according to that opinion, that you could build a sukkah during Chol HaMoed, because in that machlokes the halacha is like a chachamim against Reb Eliezer. But it has to be that it's the kind of sukkah that you could have used throughout the 7 days if you had built it earlier, as opposed to when it's on a camel or what have you, where there you can't use it on Shabbos or Yom Tov at all. Again, though, the accepted halacha is not like that. The accepted halacha is like Reb Meir, that even such a thing is kosher and you're allowed to use it. You're just not allowed to use it on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Okay. What about another?
Can you use a sukkah on Chol HaMoed that was not built before Yom Tov? Before Yom Tov, you used a sukkah.
That's what we're saying in the Machlokes of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. The halacha is like the Chachamim. That yes, the halacha is even you can have an hour before the end of Hashanah Rabbah, you realize that you need a sukkah and you build one right there just to have to be able to use for the last hour to be able to eat one last thing on Hashanah Rabbah. Yeah, it's a perfectly kosher a sukkah, and you would say leishah a sukkah on it. Now, another case, asala behema doifin l'sukkah. What happens if you use an animal as a wall for your sukkah? So before we were talking about where you're using the animal as the base for the floor and the walls of the sukkah. So then we're saying that Reb Meir says it's kosher and Reb Yehuda says it's posel. Now it's the other way around. What if you use the animal as a wall for the sukkah? Then the opinions are the other way around. Reb Meir posel, but Reb Yehuda masher. Then Reb Meir says that the sukkah is going to be posel, unless, of course, it has three other good walls, and Reb Yehuda is going to say it's kosher. Shehoyer Reb Meir oimer. Now, why does Reb Meir say what's wrong with using an animal as a wall of a sukkah? Reb Meir used to say, kol davash yesh beruach chayim, any living creature, so an animal or a person, ein oisin oisin loy doifin l'sukkah, you cannot make it a wall for the sukkah, v'loy lechi l'mavui, you also cannot use it as a lechi by the entrance of a mavui that we were talking about before, the pole that you put over there as a heker, or to remember that there's the mavui and there's a shesed abim, and not to carry from one to the other. You can't use, your mayor says you can't have an animal stand over there, even as the Gemara is going to say, if it's tied up, let's say, and have it as a lechi, it doesn't work. But like passim liberos, you also can't use them as passim around wells. The Mishnah and the Gemara in the second parak of Erev and tell us, we talked about it briefly in the previous parak, that you have, there were wells in Eretz Yisrael that the Oiler Golem would use to get water for themselves and their animals. Now, the problem is, the well itself is Rishus HaYachid. The area around it, it's in Rishus HaRabim. So how are you going to get water from the well to be able to give the animal a drink? So the Chachamim said, what you're able to do is you put up four L-shaped things around the well, with a certain maximum distance between one and the next. And the result is that way, when you look at each side, you see a semblance of a wall. You see an amma on one side, an amma on the other side, and you have a big gap in between, up to 10 ammas according to the Chachamim, up to 13 ammas and a third according to the Yehuda. But then nevertheless, you have the semblance of a wall on each side because all the corners are delineated, and therefore that's good enough to make it a Rishus HaYachid on a Daraisa level, and therefore you're allowed to draw from the well on Shabbos and give your animal to drink. So again, Reb Meir is set. Now, it doesn't have to be dafka that you have poles that are shaped like that, like an L. It can be anything else as long as it's large enough to be an amma in one direction and an amma in the other direction. But Reb Meir says you can't use an animal for that purpose. If you take an animal and tether it over there, it can't work as one of the four corners. And also Reb Meir says that an animal does not have the din, if it's used as a goylo for a kever, it does not become tummy. The goylal of a kever, Rashi here and in a number of other places in Shas, explains that a goylal is the cover of a coffin, the cover of an aron. So now, that such a thing is tome, a goylal is matame like the mess itself, mag of mas over oil, but if you use an animal as the goylal, Reb Meir says it doesn't become tome. Tosfos over here and in a number of other places explains that no, that's not what a girdle means. It means rather what you use to close up the caver afterwards. In other words, so in modern terms, the girdle would be something more like the matzeva. In olden times, the common way they used to do things is they would bury people in niches in a wall, and then afterwards they would roll, literally the word girdle means to roll, a large stone in front of the caver, and that would seal it up. So the mayor is saying that if you used an animal as a makeshift goylo, it's not going to become tummy. Mishum Rabbi Yosi Aglili Omer, af in Kosvinol of Gitei Noshim, in the name of Rabbi Yosi Aglili. They said another din that you can't do with a live animal is to write a get on it, which later on the Gemara is going to explain why. So the bottom line is Reb Meir is saying that living creatures cannot be used as the walls of a sukkah. Therefore, if you use it as the wall, Reb Meir says the sukkah is possible. Reb Yehuda has no problem with that. He says it's kosher. So the question is, my time at Reb Meir, why does Reb Meir say that it should be possible? So Abaya Omer Shema Tomus. Abaya says, because the problem is the animal might die on Yom Tov, then it's going to fall down, and then you don't have a wall over there. The Gemara is later going to ask then, okay, in that case, then why does Reb Meir hold that a goat, that it can't become a goyel? There you don't have that issue. But anyway, so that's one reason. Reb Zera Omer Shema Tivrach. Reb Zera says a different reason, because it might run away. So the Gemara points out, the pil kosher, suppose that you have an elephant and you tie it, you tether it in place, kula alma lepli, then according to that, there'd be no argument that you're allowed to use it as the wall of a sukkah. The inam mais, yesh b'niv losa yud, because after all, even if the elephant dies and falls over, the carcass of it is still, in any dimension, is more than 10 trochim. So even if it falls over, you still have a 10 tefach wall. Ki pligi repil she'ene kosher. The machlokus would be, what if you have an elephant, but it's not tied in place? So if you say it's going to die, no problem. Again, even if it dies, then it's still going to be 10 tefachim tall. But according to the opinion that it might run away, then we would have a problem because you still might run away and you're not going to have your wool. Tosfos points out, actually, the expression that we're saying over here, pligi, is a little bit odd because it's not really a machlokus. Reb Zera and Abaya are giving reasons for the mayor. The Gemara should really be saying that ika benayhu, such and such cases. Okay. Anyway, the question is, Lamanda omak zera shema tomus nechu shema tivrach, nu, and the opinion, Abaya says that it might die. Doesn't Abaya also have to take into consideration the fact that it might run away? Why is he ignoring that possibility and saying, because it's not, even though it's not tethered, it's fine? Because the only thing we have to worry about is that it might die. No, so therefore, Ella rather, we have to explain differently. The pil she'ene kosher, if the elephant is not tied up, kolam le'pli, then there's no argument. You can't use it, both Abaya and Reb Zera would agree that Reb Meir would say you can't use it because it might run away. Ki pligi b'behema kshura. The machlokas would be a regular animal, not even an elephant. If it's tied up, lamando am gzeder shema tomus, if you say the gzeder is that it might die, chayshina, because if it falls over, you're not going to have 10 trochim. But according to the opinion that it might run away, it's tied in place, it can't run away. Okay, but the question then becomes the other way around. New, and according to Reb Zera, why don't we have to worry that the animal might die and then you don't have your tent for him? And the answer is misa lo shchicha. The answer is that It's not that common that a creature is going to die. Yeah, everyone and everything eventually dies, but punk that it should while you're using it as the wall for your sukkah is not that much of a concern, and therefore we don't have to be concerned about that, and therefore we would be able to use it. As long as it's tied in place so it can't run away, then we're not concerned that it might die. So Gemara says, we'll continue the discussion tomorrow, Best Hashem, about using animals for schach and talk more generally, not for schach, rather, for walls of a sukkah, and then talk more generally about this matter of when are we choshish for Misa and when are we not, and then get back to the rest of what Reb Meir says about why animals cannot serve as the walls of a sukkah or as the goyel for a kever and so on and so forth.
Yeah, Shikaya.
Yeah, yeah.
Shikaya.